Mr. Frank Hecker, you're here. The next presentation is on the Mozilla project, non-visual access and open source. The person to present that item is Frank Hecker, who is the executive director of the Mozilla Foundation. Frank Hecker works for the foundation, which is a nonprofit organization promoting choice and information on the internet through its support of the Firefox web browser and related projects. Frank initiated and leads the Mozilla Foundation's grant program to help make Firefox a showcase for innovation in web accessibility to blind users and others. Prior to joining the Mozilla Foundation, Frank was a sales engineer with, what the heck is this called? Opsware Incorporated, supporting sales of Opsware X or 10 automation software and services to the federal government. He has also worked for CollabNet and for Netscape Communications Corporation. That's the one name I recognize. At Netscape, he was a key contributor to Netscape's decision to release source code for Netscape Communicator and was appointed one of three Netscape fellows. His personal website and blog, see, he has a personal website and blog, are at http://hecker.org. Now, let me sort of start off this thing by saying open source and Firefox are notions that we as blind computer users are interested in for a variety of reasons. We're interested in Firefox because we'd like to be able to use more than one browser, the one that most of us know in this room. I know Curtis Willoughby doesn't use this one. He uses something else because he's a Linux kind of guy, and so are some of the rest of you. But the one that most blind people seem to be using today is Internet Explorer. Is that the one we have to use? I should hope not. We'd like to use some others, and Firefox offers one possibility. During the last year, or the year before that, we got into the question of open document format, and I will tell you that all the open source advocates were down on me. They were coming after me saying, you guys in the National Federation of the Blind should be promoting open source as the savior and the solution and all of that kind of stuff to help accessibility. Now, do I disagree with that? Not necessarily. The problem was that I didn't understand what open source meant, and I didn't understand how much resources were actually being devoted to promoting the concept of open source. And also the concern that I had was, you know, as I have said before, we're sort of caught between a rock and a hard place. We spend lots and lots of money for the technologies that we use, and they don't always work the way we wish that they would. So to talk to us about what the Mozilla Foundation is doing in this area and to maybe give us an education on open source, let's give a warm welcome to Frank Hecker.
Thanks a lot. Excuse me. Thanks a lot, Curtis, for inviting me to speak.
I have water for you if you'd like. Come on.
Yeah, I will apologize in advance. I've had a long-running cold, and just the cough caught up with me again today.
You want some water? Frank?
Yeah, if you could.
I'll
thanks.
Pour you a glass.
Appreciate it. Okay.
Susan will
do that. Two people helping me here.
And I'll get one for myself.
All right.
Also, for those of you who like me are getting a little sleepy, feel free to rotate your head or stretch your shoulders, whatever you need to do to wake yourself up here. I'm in the deadly slot where you're after lunch. It's not quite the end of the day, and people are starting to get tired.
Oh, I lost my glass.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that yours
now? Well, you can have my glass if I can have yours.
Here, you have mine, and I'll have yours.
Okay. Some of you who observe what's going on might be amazed at what we just did.
That's right. It's like a water switch. All right. So I want to talk about three things today, and I'll say right up front that I'm not an expert in assistive technology. I'm not an expert in screen readers or software for the blind or in accessibility in general. Everything I've learned in the past couple of years is a result of my work in the Mozilla project. So I will try to keep my remarks as short as I can and let you all ask questions of me and educate me to the extent that that I'm educatable. I want to talk about three things today. I'd like to talk about open source a little bit. I'm going to talk about the Mozilla project and Firefox. And then lastly, I'd like to talk about just some high-level thoughts about how I think open source might affect the assistive technology industry and the software that you folks use every day. So let's talk about open source first. So there's a couple things about open source I want to emphasize. That I don't know how many of you are familiar with open source or how open source works, but there are a couple key. I'm not going to talk about open source licensing today. I'm not going to talk about the GNU GPL or BSD licenses or anything like that, because those really aren't, in a sense, the essence of open source. The essence of open source is in two or three concepts. The first is that open source arose out of frustration. Frustration that people had with the proprietary software industry and the fact that there were things they wanted to accomplish that they couldn't accomplish with proprietary software. Perhaps the best example of this is with the man who started the free software movement, Richard Stallman. When Richard Stallman was in MIT, he was one of the first hackers, as they were called then, the people who liked to work on computers, liked to program. And one of the things they were working with was a Xerox printer, an early version of a laser printer that they had gotten at MIT. And it turned out that the printer was subject to jamming. Stallman wanted to try to modify the printer's driver software so that he could alleviate the problem or at least provide better notification that the printer had jammed. And he found to his dismay that he did not have access to the source code for the printer driver. And when he went to ask for access to the source code, he could not get access to the source code. So when he founded free software, it wasn't that he started out to do good in the world or anything like that, although he's done a lot of good. It was because he was frustrated. He was frustrated that he was trying to accomplish something that the structure of the software industry at the time, which was structured around proprietary licensing and paying for your software and so on, did not allow him to do. And as a result of that, he founded the free software movement. He founded the GNU project, which brought us Emacs and the GNU C compiler and lots of other great software. And he brought us, among other things, the GNU GPL, which is the key software license in the free software world and now the open source world. The second concept I want to talk about is the idea of participation, scratching your own itch. A good example here is the Apache project, how it got started. Those of you who remember the early days of the web may remember that there was an organization called NCSA, National Center for Supercomputing Applications, University of Illinois. And they produced two things of great worth. They produced one of the first web servers, which was called NCSA HTTPD, and they produced one of the first web browsers, which was NCSA Mosaic, back in the late 90s. Mosaic eventually died out. It didn't really die out. It sort of got incorporated into Internet Explorer 1.0, and it's spiritually was followed by Netscape 1.0. But the other part of it was the web server part, NCSA HTTPD, which was released with source code, as it turned out, and it was actually released under what at that time wasn't called open source, but it was a free software license. But at a certain point, NCSA decided they didn't want to continue development of the web server. So at that point, a bunch of folks who had become dependent upon the web server, they were users of it, decided to get together and essentially try to continue development of the web server. So unlike Richard Stallman, they had the source code, so they were able to get together and work on it. And because the Internet existed, they had email lists, they had websites, things like that, they were able to coordinate their development and activities. They were able to scratch their own itch, in effect. They were users of the web server. They were able to make their own changes to the web server. They were able to make enhancements to it. And what they created eventually became the Apache project. And as many of you may know, Apache is now the dominant web server in the world today, which controls, actually runs a majority of the websites in the world today. Hmm. So that's the second idea of open source. Not only do you have the source code, but you can take that source code, you can do things with it, and you can collaborate with other folks around the world to work together to make the software better. The final idea with open source I want to talk about is the idea of the plausible promise. And this is actually relevant to what I have to say today, because I'm not going to talk to you today about a complete solution to all your problems, but I'm going to talk to you hopefully about what might be the start of something that might help you out. The idea with open source is you release early and often. You don't wait 10 years and then release a 1.0 product. You take the source code, you work with other people to do something with it, and then you release the code, however it works. And if it works great, that's great. If it doesn't work so great, well, people file bugs, and you fix the problems, and you make a next version. A good example of this is the Linux kernel. So those of you familiar with the Linux kernel today and the Linux-based systems today may know it was originally created by Linus Torvalds many years ago, like early 90s, I think, 91 or so. And today, Linux is a multi-billion-dollar industry. They have companies like Red Hat, like Novell and SUSE and so on that produce Linux distributions. But in the early days, it was just Linus Torvalds and his 386 PC and trying to write a replacement for an operating system called Minix, which he had used, which was basically designed as an educational system, in effect. It wasn't really designed as a production system. And Linus decided, hey, that looks interesting. So he created what was basically became Linux 1.01, I believe it was. And to be quite honest with you, there wasn't a whole lot to Linux 0.01 as an operating system kernel. It did not support more than 8 megabytes of memory. It did not support virtual memory, unlike other systems like Unix and Solaris and so on that existed at the time. It didn't support a lot of the current features in terms of wide range of device drivers and things like that, but it worked. At least it worked on Linus's PC, and it worked on some other people's PC that decided to try it out. So the idea was, it wasn't a complete solution, but it was a plausible promise. It was something that you could look at and say, hey, this is not the answer to all my dreams, but it looks interesting and it looks plausible, and we have the source code and we have other people to work with, and let's see if we can make it better, and maybe it'll become something when it grows up. And in fact, the Linux kernel did become something when it grew up, as did a lot of other open source projects, including Apache and the GNU tools and others. So what does that have to do with Mozilla? So Mozilla was sort of an interesting beast. It was an outgrowth of Netscape Communications Corporation. It was founded in 1998 when Netscape decided to release the source code for the Netscape Communicator browser. Now, as it happened, I was at Netscape at the time. In fact, I was one of the people that inside Netscape were recommending that we release source code, partly because it was clear that at the time, with Internet Explorer having taken over the market, that Netscape really had nowhere to go with its traditional strategy and should look elsewhere for trying to do something. And what Netscape ended up doing was basically releasing the source code for Netscape Communicator, as it then was, starting an open source project called the Mozilla Project, and hoping something would eventually happen. And as it happened, something did eventually happen. It took a while. It took a few years. It took about 5 years for the Mozilla Foundation to be started as a nonprofit organization. And it took about 6 years for our most popular product, Firefox, to appear in a 1.0 version. But it appeared it did, and Firefox has become pretty popular as an alternative to Internet Explorer. It's nowhere near taking over the market. It's probably about 10 to 15% market share worldwide. But there are actually countries in Europe where Firefox has a pretty high market share, 20, 30% or more in some cases. So it's a pretty successful product. And because of the way the Mozilla Foundation evolved, we were able to create a financial revenue stream to finance development of the product, which remains a free and open source product. And we now have the Mozilla Foundation, which is a nonprofit organization, and the Mozilla Corporation, which is a for-profit subsidiary that exists under the foundation. So that's where we are today. Now, in terms of accessibility, my first encounter with accessibility-related issues was actually when I worked at Netscape. As Curtis mentioned, I worked for the Netscape Federal Sales Group in the D.C. area, where I still live. Actually, not too far from NFB headquarters, just west of Baltimore. And part of my job was basically to talk to federal agencies about their use of Netscape products. And one day I was called into one agency, who shall remain nameless, and seated at a conference table with about 20 folks with one of their blind employees next to me, and basically read the Riot Act about Section 508 and accessibility of Netscape Communicator, which for those of you who remember Netscape Communicator 4.5 was a pretty sad story, actually, in terms of accessibility. And at the time, I was frustrated because I didn't have any good answer. you know, the most I could say was, hey, well, I'll get back to you. I'll talk to folks. I'll talk to folks at AOL, who was AOL by that time had bought Netscape. And I can't remember if this was before or after Netscape or AOL was being sued by Netscape, but it was around that time. And so I thought, well, you know, this is not good. We should do something about this. And I tried to do stuff while we were at Netscape. But eventually I left Netscape, went other places, and came back to the Mozilla Foundation. And thought, well, what about this problem of accessibility? And fortunately, we had somebody who was involved in accessibility stuff over the years. I was in a position to actually spend some money on accessibility-related stuff, and so we decided to do some accessibility-related funding of projects to make Firefox more accessible, and that's where we are today. So what I want to talk to you about now is a little bit about where we're at today and where we're going with Firefox in terms of accessibility-related issues. So the first thing I want to say is that Firefox, as it is today, is, I would say, okay but not great in terms of accessibility. If you're using WindowEyes, if you're a blind user using WindowEyes, it seems to be, from the people we've heard from, it seems to be pretty decent product. Yeah. If you're using JAWS, even JAWS 8 with Firefox, it's maybe adequate to okay but not great because there's still some remaining issues. So it's still some issues we have to work with 3M Scientific and folks to work on, and we're continuing to do that. But at the same time, we're also pursuing some other ways of looking at the accessibility problem. Because in our mind, it's not just sufficient for us to look at the Windows situation on Windows. It's not just sufficient for us just to look at the situation with JAWS or WindowEyes. We really have to look at other things in the accessibility area. And in particular, there are things that have come down the pike, like dynamic HTML, AJAX-based applications, rich internet applications, things like that we talked about earlier that we need to look at. So our goal there is not really to just catch up with Internet Explorer. Our goal is really to see if we can move ahead of Internet Explorer in some areas at least and make ourselves sort of a showcase for accessibility, at least in some areas that are coming down the pike. So here's what we're looking at doing. I want to share before I go on. This is not just a personal interest of mine. It's also, I think, part and parcel of our mission as an organization. As Curtis mentioned, the Mozilla Foundation is a nonprofit organization. We are not a proprietary software company. We don't sell our products. They're free for everyone to use, and they're free for everyone to take the source code and use as they please. But we have a public mission. Our mission is to promote choice and innovation on the internet. And more broadly, it's really to help you make the internet a better place, help everyone in the world make the internet a public place. We have if you're interested in our thinking around this, there's a document called the Mozilla Manifesto, which we put out. The first principle is basically that the internet is an integral part of everybody's lives. And the second principle is that the internet must remain open and accessible to all. And that's one of the principles that's driving us to do things in the area of accessibility and other areas that are key to the future of the web. So in accessibility in particular, we're doing the following. The first thing, as I said, we'd like to see if we can make Firefox a showcase for accessibility, at least in some areas. Probably our main area of interest there is rich internet applications. We've been doing a lot of work with Way Aria, the Web Accessibility Initiative, Accessible Rich Internet Applications project out of the World Wide Web Consortium. We've actually implemented some Aria features in Firefox. We've funded things like people working on Aria test cases. We have people on the working group for Aria. And we're doing a number of other things in that area. We're also working in the area of accessibility APIs. We work with IBM on something called iAccessible 2. For those of you who might have heard of that, it's basically intended as a successor API to MSAA on Windows. And it's iAccessible 2 is the name. I don't know why it's 2 instead of just iAccessible.
Yeah, where's iAccessible 1?
Yeah, why is iAccessible 1? Right? That's what it's called. So who might have disagreed? And they're actually some of the folks from Freedom Scientific and GW Micro and other folks are actually looking at iAccessible 2 as a possible API that they want to support future versions of JAWS and WindowEyes and other products. And then finally, we want to look at the horror area of tools and test cases and infrastructure for those for these new things. So, for example, with ARIA, it's not sufficient for us just to build ARIA functionality into Firefox. We also need things like test cases, like how do you test if you're going to have a spec for ARIA and how you do make these rich internet applications accessible, how do you test that an application is actually conforming to that spec? So we funded some folks to do test cases for that, for example. This is where one of the nice things about open source comes in, because we can actually, and I'll talk more about this a little later, we can actually work with the entire tool chain, and if tools don't exist, we can create our own. So, for example, in the ARIA case, well, you know, things like JAWS and Window Eyes aren't really ready for ARIA just yet, at least in terms of where the spec is today. But fortunately, we have a guy that we funded to work on something called Firefox, which is a sort of a screen reader for Firefox specifically. It sort of installs with Firefox as an extension, and it works as a screen reader in Firefox. And the guy working on it is basically one of the folks involved in ARIA, and he was also the first one doing the test cases for ARIA. And so rather than rely on somebody else to try to figure out how this stuff works, he can basically implement ARIA-based features in Firefox. We can see if they work with Firefox, see if they implement the spec, work out the test cases, and essentially control our own destiny, not to rely on somebody else. So that's the first thing we're going to do, is Firefox accessibility. The second thing we want to do is, because we are an open source project, even though there are about 100 people involved in the Mozilla project that are employed full-time on the project as part of the Mozilla Corporation, we need more people than that. And so one of the things we want to do, especially in the area of accessibility, one of the things we want to do is we want to build up a community of developers who are interested in specifically in accessibility issues around Mozilla and Firefox. And these are not just developers. Also, we need testers. We need folks who use the product, report bugs, and especially people who will sort of work on the bleeding edge and work with new Firefox versions. So we've done things like we've done grants to encourage people to work on accessibility-related projects. I'll talk about one of those in a little bit. We've sponsored people to attend CSUN and other conferences and talk about their own projects. And finally, we're working on accessibility of the actual tools you need to be an open source developer in the Mozilla project. You know, one of the things we've found is if you're a blind programmer or a blind tester or whatever, and you want to work in the Mozilla project, it's not just a question of having JAWS and a copy of Firefox. You also need to be able to use all the tools that we have in the Mozilla project for developers to be productive. We have a bug reporting system. We have tools to let you browse the source code. We have tools to let you check out the source code. We have build systems. We have things that track when the changes go in and who made them, things like that. And we have chat rooms where developers talk to each other. So part of our goal is essentially to make all that accessible to blind developers and blind QA folks and other blind users who want to try out Firefox. So, for example, we funded somebody to make our chat program. There's a Mozilla-based chat program called ChatZilla, so we funded somebody to make the chat program more accessible. It turns out it's actually an interesting example of synergy, because chat is a good example where some of the concepts that are being worked on in ARIA are of interest. Like, how do you actually make a threaded chat accessible to somebody? Do you interrupt when a new thing comes in? Do you prioritize things a certain way and so on? There's a lot of interesting things that go on there, and again, those things are working on. Okay. And the third thing we do we want to produce a lot of resources for people who are doing accessibility stuff in Firefox and Mozilla. So, for example, we have a website called accessfirefox.com, which is run by a third party, a gentleman named Ken Saunders, who's blind. It's primarily for users of Firefox. On our main developer site, which is developer.mozilla.org, we have an accessibility page there that we have a lot of resources for as well. So those are our three main initiatives that we're doing funding for in 2007-2008. And the final thing I want to talk about in terms of Firefox is we also want to make it accessible not just on Windows, but also on other platforms as well, specifically Mac and Linux, especially Linux, because being on Linux, again, gives us the opportunity to control our destiny, because everything on Linux is going to be open source and free software. So we're going to have free screen, you know, free software screen readers, like Orca, for example. And so we want to be able to work with those things and make sure that they support Firefox appropriately. Okay. The last thing I want to talk about just for a couple minutes is just I want to talk about, so where's all this heading, and give you my thoughts on where open source is going to affect the assistive technology industry. So the first thing I want to say is that, again, I'm not a long-time veteran of the assistive technology industry. So I'm not going to make any detailed predictions. I'm not going to claim I have the answers to everything. But there are a couple of high-level trends I think are of interest. The first thing I'll say is that things are not going to change overnight. By nature of the way things work, you know, things build up over many years, and they're not going to be any overnight revolutions in terms of the way open source affects AT products. But if you look at the way innovation happens, there are a couple things you can say. First is one of the folks I'm fond of quoting is a guy named Clayton Christensen, who's I think he's at Harvard now, Harvard professor of business, that has a theory about how innovation happens. He distinguishes between two types of innovation. The first type of innovation is sustaining innovation, essentially things that make existing products better for the people that are already using them. So JAWS 8 is a sustaining innovation compared to JAWS 7. Vista is a sustaining innovation compared to XP. It's the same people using the same products. They have requirements. The requirements are not met by the existing products, so you enhance the products to make them better. Sustaining innovation is very important. Most of the innovation that happens in the world is sustaining innovation. The other type of innovation is disruptive innovation. Okay? Now, disruption can be a good thing or a bad thing. But there are two types of disruptive innovation. One type of disruptive innovation is when things get cheaper, what they call low-cost disruptive innovation. So, for example, when you use a product and then somebody comes out with a cheaper substitute, that's a disruptive innovation. It makes the same functionality available to people who couldn't use it before because the cost was too high. A good example of disruptive innovation from an open source perspective will be if open source succeeds over time in driving down costs and prices in the AT world. I mean, we're giving our products away. I don't suggest that everybody give their products away, but over time, what we've seen in the proprietary world, in the non-AT world, is that open source has been a function for providing increased functionality to folks at lower cost. It's not that people aren't still making money selling software, but they're making money selling software for higher value things. You know, you can't charge, you know, X dollars for the same thing that you charged X dollars for 10 years ago. You've got to provide new value. And so in the assistive technology world, I think that with the advent of open source alternatives, you'll start to see over time the ability to have people using things like screen readers that can't afford them today, whether they be people in the developing world or institutions like schools or libraries or medical facilities or whatever, that can't buy copies of JAWS for all their terminals, for example. A good example here is in the county I live in, Howard County, Maryland, our library has Linux-based public access terminals. Right. So if open source screen readers advance to the point where they're actually usable, they could easily equip every access terminal library with a screen reader at no incremental cost. Right? No $1,000 overseas license or anything like that. That's a good thing, I think. The other type of disruptive innovation is the new market disruptive innovation, which basically means new markets and new uses that you couldn't do before. You want to do new people doing new things, in effect. A good example here, I think, is over time, what we're seeing, at least what I'm seeing, is based on my time and looking at it, is you see the advent of not just software running on PCs, but you see the advent of special purpose dedicated AT devices, both based on things like pocket PC type technology, based on Linux and so on. A good example here is the Level Star device that I'm familiar with, that I've talked to the folks at. So open source acts as a catalyst for things like that, but basically building up an infrastructure of R&D that's freely usable by anybody who wants to use it So you're not faced with having to reinvent the wheel. You're not faced with having to license new software for every device you sell. But there's just stuff that's there free for the taking, which is one good reason why in the mobile world, for example, a lot of the smartphone development, a lot of the high-end cell phone development is focused on Linux as a kernel and not necessarily on things like Windows Mobile and Pocket PC type technology. So that's, I think, another long-term trend that will probably may end up affecting the assistive technology industry. So that's basically all I have to say. So just to repeat, I mean, if you're happy with the way things are today, if you're a happy Windows user, a happy JAWS user, a happy user of Microsoft Office and other things, then I probably don't have a lot to say to you, to be honest with you. If you're frustrated, you know, with some aspect of today's computing experience, if there are websites you can't access because they're using DHTML, for example, or if you'd like to bring screen readers to more folks and you find the cost barrier is an issue or whatever, then maybe open source has something to say to you. And if it does have something to say to you, then we're willing to listen. And we have a community of folks that are interested in this now. We're starting to build a critical mass of folks, and we invite you to participate in our project. If you're interested, as I said, the accessfirefox.com is a good site for end users. If you're a developer, go to developer.mozilla.org and look for the accessibility link. There are links to our forums, which are fairly active, and we'd be glad to have you participate. And with that, thank you very much. And if there are any questions, I'll be glad to answer them.
Okay. Any questions from anybody?
Dave
Feynman, is that you?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
What is Mozilla written? Is it C++?
Yeah.
He's a programmer. He wants to rip
your
code
apart.
Right.
This is a good question. So the answer is, what is Mozilla written in? Actually, that's a very interesting question. Let me tell you what the answer is. Mozilla is actually written in a combination of C++ for the inner core of the product. So if you want to work on the inner core of the product, you need to be a C++ programmer. But here's the neat part. The parts of Mozilla that are actually most interesting, which are the UI parts and the other parts around the core. The core is just things like, you know, how do you access the network or how do you render web pages. The neat parts, like how the UI works and so on, are basically written in a language called XUL, X-U-L, which essentially is an XML-based language that looks very much like HTML and is combined with JavaScript. So if you know how to write HTML and JavaScript, then you're about 80-90% of the way of being able to hack on the Mozilla interface. And so, for example, a good example is there are a number of companies that have created Mozilla-based products, and a lot of the work they do is basically taking the core Mozilla code and then putting new XUL around it, in essence, to make like a media player or whatever. And I should also mention there's also a thing called Firefox extensions. Firefox, you can extend it by downloading code that installs into Firefox. Firefox extensions can be written solely in XUL and JavaScript. So, again, if you're an HTML JavaScript programmer, you're 80-90% of the way there to writing a Firefox extension.
You have a lot of Java wrappers as well, right?
I'm sorry, the question was about...
You have a lot of Java wrappers?
We have Java wrappers?
Yeah.
There is a, you can run Java under Firefox, and there is code in the product to let you do that, but the product is not really, Java runs more as a plug-in under Firefox. We don't really use Java for the core UI, user interface, or any of the core functions of the product. So being a Java programmer is nice if you want to run Java applets under Firefox, but it doesn't really, you can't really extend Firefox with Java that much. I have a question here on the right.
Okay, who's that?
Who's that?
This is Brandon.
Brandon?
I'm wondering, since you're in Mozilla and you're talking about open source, do you guys know about the whole NVDA thing?
He wants to know about that.
Yes, we do know about NVDA. In fact, I have something to tell you about NVDA. So, it's for those of you not aware of it, NVDA, Non-Visual Desktop Access, is a open source screen reader for Windows written by a gentleman named Mick Kern, who lives in Australia. He's a blind developer. We actually sponsored Mick to go to CSUN to work with some of the Firefox folks there and to attend CSUN. And we're actually now funding his organization, NV Access. We're giving initial funding to do NVDA development. So I just approved a grant last week to NV Access to have them do some work to make NVDA work better with Firefox. So the answer is, yeah, we're very familiar with NVDA. We think NVDA is a great thing, and we're very happy to be supporting it.
Okay.
Shailesh?
The Thunderbird, the email client, right?
Yes, Thunderbird is the email client, that's correct.
That also works with MetaWise, JAWS?
So the question was the accessibility of Thunderbird. So I would have to say that accessibility of Thunderbird is not as good as accessibility of Firefox right today, either with Windows Eyes or JAWS. We are funding some folks to improve accessibility of Thunderbird, and we'll probably provide some future funding for that. So we are working on the problem, but we're not there yet. We're more at the plausible promise stage there, to be honest with you, not so much at the, you know,
so on a related note, since you're helping out the guy with NVDA, what about that and its relationship with Thunderbird?
I honestly do not know how Thunderbird works with NVDA. You'd probably have to talk to Mick, to be honest with you, or somebody else is using NVDA on a regular basis. But I will say that our in terms of users, Firefox has tens of millions of users. Thunderbird has a few million users, so it's probably an order of magnitude more people using Firefox than Thunderbird.
Okay.
And as a consequence, we tend to devote an order of magnitude more effort to Firefox than Thunderbird. So we're happy to look at doing stuff with Thunderbird. We're funding work in that area, but we're going to work with Firefox first.
Brad Hodges.
Brad.
I think your assessment is absolutely on track. But I would say this: for those of us who need to access Outlook, while we are away from our native network, and we all know what a struggle that can be, Thunderbird on a stick, if you will, the portable version on a thumb drive, offers some fascinating options, particularly considering that there's a lack of accessibility in some of the native Outlook web, remote web accessibility. So that'd be a significant thing, I think, for folks.
Okay, wait.
Yeah, that's a good point. Let me just respond to that. That's a good point. I used to work in sales, and one of the things I learned in sales was to underpromise and overdeliver. So I'm not going to try to overpromise. I don't want to discourage you from using Thunderbird, but I also want to overpromise what it will do today. Yes, I'm sorry,
Jason.
Yes.
I think Brad might have been talking about Thunder, which is the free. Well, I don't think it's not free. Other screen reader available. But I personally use.
You were talking about Thunderbird, Brad?
I was talking about Thunderbird Portable Edition. Absolutely right. People call it Thunderbird on a stick, kind of generically.
Yeah, that's the email client on a
email
stick.
Email client,
yeah.
And you just shove it in your machine and off you go.
But what I was going to mention, though, is I use Thunderbird with Windows Eyes. I'm at home and at work. And I love it. There's a couple little problems, but I mean, for the most part, it runs very, very well.
Good.
There's Jason from Colorado there, I can tell you.
Okay,
any other questions?
Any questions?
The rest of you guys are awake?
I have one last question.
David?
What percent of, to make Firefox equal to Internet Explorer, I think it's 8, isn't it, or 7? The latest one?
7, Internet Explorer 7 is the latest one.
And how much changes would you have to make to get that far? 10%, 20%?
In terms of accessibility or in terms of function?
Functionality and accessibility.
Okay, so the question was comparing Firefox 2, which is the current version, with Internet Explorer 7, in terms of accessibility. Well, some people would say that as far as Windows Eyes is concerned, it's on par in terms of accessibility.
The Windows Eyes user will say yes, that's true.
Now, as far as JAWS is concerned, there are some outstanding JAWS issues. To be honest with you, I don't want to throw this back to Freedom Scientific, but I think a lot of them are probably things we'll have to rely on help from Freedom Scientific to address. And we can take it so far, and then at a certain point we need their help as well to help us out. And we're working with them, but I think it's probably more of a joint thing. I don't want to really quantify a percentage because, you know, there might be particular JAWS users that there's a particular problem or a particular website that just totally ruins the experience for them. So I'd say rather than listen to me, talk to some people who are using JAWS with Firefox too, especially JAWS 8. I would not recommend using JAWS 7 or prior versions with Firefox. I would use JAWS 8 if you possibly can.
Brad Hodges.
Brad.
I think that each product has certain strengths and weaknesses. God help you if you're on a slow network with a new version of IE. Sometimes Firefox can be very snappy, etc. I think what's important, though, here in this division needs to have a conversation about is that is the expectations that we as a community have for our screen reader developers vis-a-vis the open source products. And this is a dynamic that I think is somewhat different than a situation in which a for-profit software firm can work with a screen reader manufacturer to accomplish certain things. And I think it's worth considering and worth discussing what is that relationship, if it's any different.
Good point. Any other questions?
James Dietz.
James Dietz.
Yes. All right. I've heard you mention several other APIs which are getting accessibility in similar ways to Microsoft Active Accessibility. But so far, I've only heard you really mention getting Firefox to work with screen readers which are already out, Windows, JAWS, and NVDA. But IE seems to use, a API, which anybody who, say somebody wanted to, out of the blue, go get up and write a screen reader, and they might, it sounds to me, I don't know that much about it, but it sounds to me like they can get it to work with IE because it uses APIs which come with Windows. But with Firefox, they would have to talk with you, and you would have to say, oh, okay, well, is there really that much
true
there?
No,
I think that's not true.
Yeah, I'm not an expert on this, so I may stumble a bit here. But let me describe to you what I think the situation is. So, this is specifically with regard to Firefox on Windows. So, Firefox on Windows, as I understand it, basically implements and makes use of MSAA, Microsoft Accessibility API, and that is how we expose things in Firefox to screen readers and other AT products. However, my understanding is that screen readers do not solely rely on MSAA because it doesn't provide all the functionality required for the things they need to do. And that especially gets hairy when you talk about things like web-based applications where you have things like dynamically refreshing text and so on that are not the sort of things you'd find in Microsoft Word. So that basically what ends up with screen readers, they end up having to do hacks and they have to, in essence, be hacked to work with specific products like whether it be Word or whatever. Each product has to be the screen reader has to be tuned to that product, and that's why it's hard to get screen reader support for some products because they don't have a big enough market share to justify doing that sort of intensive tuning. Now, we can't solve that problem totally, but what we can do, and one of the reasons why we're supporting the iAccessible 2 initiative, is that the iAccessible 2 API basically provides more ways by which we can expose things from Firefox to screen readers and other AT products. And to the extent that screen readers can make use of the iAccessible 2 interfaces, then they can basically get information out of Firefox that they need to have in a controlled and supported way and not have to rely on Firefox-specific hacks. To my knowledge, Free and Scientific, and GW Micro, and other folks have basically said, yeah, we're definitely looking at iAccessible 2, we'll definitely consider using it. So that may at least be a partial solution to the problem of having to customize screen reader support for each application, at least for the application support that support iAccessible 2. Now, one of the problems is Microsoft with Vista, as I understand it, introduced a whole new way of doing accessibility APIs. And so that's a whole another kettle of fish. But from our point of view, we're positioning iAccessible 2 as sort of an upgrade to MSAA and not a total revolution in the way things are done. I don't know if that answers your question, but that's to the best of my knowledge. That's my understanding.
But here. So, Frank, let me ask you this question. I suppose the question is, if you look at what Firefox exposes, are all those things that are exposed, programmatically speaking, they're all public specifications, and so it's not a thing that's hidden. So if anybody wanted to do the work necessary to get what they needed from Firefox, the points of exposure are all there. Is that an accurate statement or not?
No, that
is not.
That is an accurate statement.
Okay.
So we're exposed in multiple ways, right? We're exposed at the level of binary level of APIs. We expose MSAA hooks. We're exposed at the level of providing documentation on how we do all this stuff, and we document our accessibility architecture. And finally, we're exposed at the level of the source code, in the sense that our complete source code is on the net, and anybody who wants to participate in accessibility development and see how we do things is free to look at the source code and find it out.
Okay, I think that pretty much answered my question. Any other questions for Frank?
When you're ready.
Sir. You want to be recognized, sir?
No.
All right. Any other questions for Frank?
Is he talking about Mozilla?
Yes, he is. All right, well, let's give a warm hand for Frank. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I hope, Frank, that you'll keep in touch with us. The work of Mozilla is of great interest to us, and the use of Firefox with assistive technology is of also great interest, and we're distressed to hear that maybe sometimes a problem is not being fixed because a screen access vendor doesn't do what needs to get done, and so if you maybe need somebody to talk to them about it, you might talk to us about that.
Yeah.
So thank you very much.
Will do, Curtis. All right, thanks very much again for having me here. I really appreciate the privilege.